Your WWE Week in Review is just moments away as Ashley Mann joins me this week and we discuss everything happening in WWE, from the Otis and Mandy Rose segment on SmackDown to Roman Reigns versus The Fiend presumed at WrestleMania, or is it? Goldberg challenging for the Universal Championship. We speculate on what John Cena could be doing on SmackDown in a couple of weeks, and The Undertaker's WrestleMania opponent, as well as Orton and Edge and that storyline that we continue to just absolutely love. So Ashley and I cover everything and, of course, a ton more in this show, and we're going to get it all started right after this. This episode is brought to you by the Can of Spam podcast. Sometimes you just need to turn your brain off and indulge in some pure entertainment. Let's stop lying to ourselves. Everyone loves a good poop story or dad joke. Give in to your inhibitions and tune in to the Can of Spam podcast with Nick and Kavika. Much like a talk show, they're often joined by a guest and play through hilarious segments like which superpower is best, lightsaber toenails, or tiny booger grenades. Sometimes they examine age-old questions like do fish have ears? Most episodes end in a comical draft competition. They take turns making selections for their team based on a topic or scenario such as you're stranded on an island. What four items do you want with you? So guys, go check out the Can of Spam podcast. They're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iHeartRadio. You can also follow them on Twitter at Can of Spam Pod. So if you guys love video games, then you got to check out the Hammer and Trickster YouTube channel. The channel was created by two veterans. One was from the Army, the other from the Navy. And what they do is play Rainbow Six Siege. They upload a new video every single week, and they play other video games as well. But you got to check this out. If you love watching raw, unedited video gameplay with the shoot 'em up style games, you got to check this channel out. Again, the channel is called Hammer and Trickster. They also add some badass rock music, and you can just watch them kick ass for hours. So head on over to YouTube and just subscribe to Hammer and Trickster. Trust me, you won't regret it.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast, the most passionate and authentic wrestling analysis on the web. We've got you covered with every Raw, SmackDown, and NXT show, giving you a no bullshit opinion. We know you love wrestling. We do too. So let's get this show underway.
And that's the bottom line. What? Because Stone Cold said so.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Sunday, February 16th, 2020. Thank you so much for spending your time with us and taking the time out of your day or night or morning and putting some wrestling audio into your ears, because this show is only successful because of you. I can't just sit and talk to myself about this and, you know, say that this is a successful show because I need your help. And thank you guys for making this show what it is and continues to grow it. And trust me when I say things are only getting started. This show is going to be here for a very long time. And as long as you guys continue to support the show, that's going to be the case. So thank you so much for joining me again on this Sunday evening as I record this. And today, Ashley Mann joins me as we cover everything. I know in the open of the show, I let you know that we covered everything from Undertaker's WrestleMania opponent, speculated WrestleMania opponent, I say that very carefully, to Randy Orton's brilliance and how he could build absolute nuclear heat from now until WrestleMania. What's that secret formula? I know he's super hot now as a heel, but what could he do to make it absolutely explosive heat? Well, we break that down for you as well, and got riled up just thinking about it as we continue to book ourselves into a frenzy. And WrestleMania season gets hotter and hotter with every passing day. And now we have Super Showdown, just a week and a half away until Super Showdown. Whether you love the show, protest the show, hate the show, or feel indifferent, it's happening, and it's going to be a part of the road to WrestleMania. So we covered that as well, and didn't give too many predictions, although some of them seem to be kind of layups with what the outcomes of the match are. So we do cover a couple of things that we think could happen at Super Showdown. Elimination Chamber, of course, is also the wild card that is in between the Elimination Chamber and Mania, really only 2 weeks after the Super Showdown pay-per-view. So Ashley is just moments away. But first, guys, I want to let you know that if you want to support this show and you want it to continue, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and you can get all the ads and plugs, all that stuff removed, as well as exclusive content, video, blogs, and much more. So head on over to Patreon if you'd like to check that out. And if not, if you love your Apple Podcast feed or Google Play or Spotify or Spreaker or iHeartRadio, TuneIn Radio, Radio.com, and the list goes on, you can support the show by clicking that review button, giving us 5 stars, and just writing a general review or just hitting 5 stars at all. I mean, it takes, what, a tap of a thumb to do? And it absolutely helps us in the rankings as we continue to climb ever so close to the top 10 of the wrestling podcasts on Apple. It's, boy, it flirts with it, it teases it, and then it just drops down a few and gets back close. And we just keep teasing that top 10, guys. I know we can do it. And I really appreciate the support that you guys have given me. And I know we'll get there. So, all right. Well, you know the deal right now. We are about to dive into Ashley. We're about to dive into the conversation about WWE this week in WWE. So buckle in. Here we go. And I will be back on Tuesday with your Raw review. Wednesday is your wrestling nostalgia. I have a special guest. And then Thursday and Friday, NXT, AEW, back to your week in review this coming weekend. So back in the saddle for this week in 2020 as we start the third week of February already. It's crazy. 2020 is flying by, and it's going to continue to do so as we are on the road to WrestleMania. And it's only, what, 7 weeks away or so, WrestleMania? So it's not going to be long before we are getting closer and closer to that magical day in April. So, all right, let's get to Ashley and myself talking wrestling and enjoy. I'll talk to you next time. I'll see you Tuesday. Super Showdown is, what, 11 days away on a random Thursday that I will be, as Ashley and I just talked about, sitting in my cube trying to sneak watching while she does the same. And, well, Ashley, welcome back to the show. There's a lot to talk about this week with just the different things going on, particularly with SmackDown, which was a very sports entertainment-y type of show rather than a sports simulation show. So, Ashley, welcome back, and thank you for stopping by.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's a fun little change in the schedule.
It is. It is. It's always great to have you here. And I got to ask you right off the top of my head here, biggest story of the week, Otis and Mandy. Otis gets slighted. Oh. Otis gets slighted by Dolph Ziggler. And what did you think about this? Are you interested? Is this something that you thought was well executed? Are you interested in seeing what happens next? Where do you stand on it?
I was so upset when I saw that it was Dolph Ziggler. Like, I actually yelled out no. Like, I screamed out no when I saw that it was Dolph and realized that Otis, you know, like, once you saw Otis's face and he dropped the flowers, it was just so heartbreaking for me. I never imagined being so invested in this weird little love story and now maybe love triangle. But man, I'm so interested to see how this plays out and which way they take this, because I have maybe one or two theories on which route they're going to go with it, but I'm so into it. And I was actually bummed that was it. Like, once we saw Dolph and them sitting at the table eating dinner, we didn't really get anything else after that. So I was actually kind of bummed and looking forward to next week to see how they follow up with it.
I second that. This feels like a much more mature, easy to follow storyline of Lana and Bobby Lashley and Rusev.
Right. This is. It's amazing. It's the same company. It's like two different worlds. I don't want to say the classy version, but it's just like two complete different takes on a love story.
Because it's infinitely easier to follow, and it's much more believable, and it's just they're baby stepping this, and I'm totally fine with that. I left wanting more. I know some people were complaining on social media that Otis didn't go and protest and interrupt the segment and interrupt and say, "Hey, Mandy, what are you doing with Dolph?" I'm okay with that. I'm fine that he didn't, because it leaves you wanting more. It left me with more questions than answers. And I can't say that happens very often with WWE storyline.
Right, and Otis, the character, isn't that type of guy to cause a big scene or anything like that either. They're in a public place. Obviously, it wasn't like they were backstage or amongst fellow wrestlers where he may have been more comfortable to approach a situation like that. But he was already nervous as all get out because that was the whole thing going into it. He was nervous. Like, this was, you know, one of the biggest moments of his life. So he was super excited. And to see that, he was heartbroken. So I don't think Otis, the character, would have caused a scene and approached a situation anyway. I think what he did was what Otis would do, in my opinion.
You're right. You saw his heart break and you felt for the character. And it's, I am much more interested in this than I ever thought I would be, because to be honest, I saw this as Mandy playing, ultimately just stringing him along and just going to turn around and be like, you know, you thought you could be with someone like me, and ultimately just crushing his heart. And that still may be the case. It still could be that she is playing Otis and she's ultimately going to be this evil, conniving, you know what. And she could be. But there's also the element of, well, wouldn't it be kind of cool to see them together? And the journey of getting to that moment of maybe they finally kiss and they're dating. Like, you know, you're waiting for those moments. And I got to give WWE their props, whether they meant to do this or not. On the execution of this, of course, Otis is what Vince views as kind of a comedy character, although I hope eventually this is not his full career where they actually legitimize him rather than just kind of being this jolly good, you know, big-hearted guy that is, you know, good for comedy. And I think they will. But for now, they're really doing a solid job on this. And I don't know what Dolph's role is in all of this. We saw him a number of weeks ago step on the fruitcake that he presented to Mandy. So he kind of pops his head in and out of this story. You alluded to, you have some theories. Do you care to share with the class?
Of course. Yeah. So I could be way off base, but I think first off with Dolph, I think his involvement allows this to actually become like a wrestling storyline where they can take it in the ring. Whereas before it was just Otis and Mandy interacting and they really couldn't, you know, and Sonya and Tucky were in the background, of course, but there really wasn't much else that they could do with besides, you know, tell the story and their love triangle or their love story blossoming. But now I think Dolph being inserted into this gives them an actual payoff and an actual storyline and more substance to the story going forward, because now Otis can fight Dolph, you know, in the upcoming weeks. But, you know, I kind of think that this could be crazy, but I think that it's going to end up being that Mandy does end up falling for Otis and they end up becoming a thing, but it was Sonya who put Dolph up to this. And so, because my thing is, like, how would Dolph know where to go, right? Mandy acted surprised when she saw Dolph because she was expecting Otis, so how else would Dolph know where to go? And you would think that Sonya would know where Mandy's going to dinner. You know, she maybe dropped her off, and I don't think Mandy had her phone or anything like that either, so I think Sonya may have been the one who told Dolph, you know, where to go and kind of put Dolph up to it. And of course, Dolph's character is like this slimy guy anyway, and he's not really doing anything else. So why not have him be that guy? So I think it could go that direction. And regardless of what Sonya's motives are, it could just be that they've been on a losing streak and she blames Mandy for being distracted with Otis and not paying attention to their tag team. You don't necessarily have to go like the love route. I mean, you could, but I think it could be more so the losing streak and then just go forward from that.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's the only explanation as to how he knew where to find them. And
right, because how else would he?
You wouldn't. He would have no idea, and obviously Otis wouldn't share that with anybody. Tucky wouldn't share that with anybody, and Mandy would obviously share it with Sonya, and Sonya could then relay the information. So yeah, it could be a jealousy, maybe true love thing with them, but we were seeing that over on Raw with Liv Morgan and Lana. I'm okay with it. I don't really care, but I think that would feel kind of like a duplicate storyline on SmackDown. So I think it should be a professional reason why she did it. And she could point back to, you know, Otis cost me the match the last time that he was out here. And it was at my request, but he cost me the match. And he did, obviously inadvertently. And, you know, she could tell her, hey, ever since he came into your life, we've been, you know, on a losing streak. And they have big time.
So they got to do something with them as a team, you know?
Exactly. So this makes total sense. having eventually this team completely split in at the seams and have Sonya versus Mandy. And you could have, well, you could really have Sonya and Dolph versus Mandy and Otis. I mean,
yeah,
there's things to do here. And absolutely, I never thought of that, but that's really the only explanation that is for Dolph being there. So, but I think this was produced very well. I don't think it was too cheesy. I love the way that Otis was coming in and still nervous and, you know, licking his hair to make it, you know, straight. And he had to cut off sleeves. So he was still kind of, he was like,
I love how it was parted to the side like that. Yes. Like, it was just so perfect.
It was great stuff. I mean, I am not typically of I guess you could say at times cheesy, but when it's done right and it's executed well and you have characters that are all in like Otis, it really makes this much more enjoyable, and it's an easy story to follow. I don't have to think too hard or roll my eyes. I really have nothing bad to say about this story. I really don't, and I'm looking forward to next week to see what happens.
Me too. Yeah, I just follow up with you. I agree 100%. I love how they threaded it throughout the show on Friday, and honestly, that was the most number one thing that I was looking forward to the most on SmackDown was seeing how their date played out. And when I saw his devastation, it made me wanting more. So I'm very excited to see how they continue this going forward. And shout out to them, because they are actually capitalizing on something that we're interested in. And it just feels natural, you know, like it doesn't feel like they're forcing this on us. And it's just something that we can actually just enjoy and put no effort into, because it makes sense, like you said.
It does.
Yeah.
It's amazing how easy sometimes things can be to just present something, not overproduce it, not overthink it, and just give us what we want. And I think the majority of fans probably do want to eventually see Otis and Mandy become a couple, and they're going to string this out, I'm sure, a few more weeks, and that's totally cool. I'm really interested to see how the Dolph Ziggler aspect of this plays out and how she finds out Sonya told Dolph and why she did it. And this is going to be great TV. I mean, it's not trashy TV. While Bobby Lashley and Lana and Liv Morgan and that whole jumbled mess was at times entertaining, it was a jumbled mess. And this is something extremely easy to follow. So, well, before we go any further, I wanted to give you an opportunity, of course, to let everybody know about your other show you do, because I know sometimes it slips my mind, and it's a great show that you guys have. So let everyone know what the show is, how they can find you, and anything else.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's called Wrestle Rewind. You can check it out on pretty much any podcast streaming device, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all that good stuff. And definitely check out the live feed on Facebook Live on Tuesdays at 8:30.
Very good. All right. So moving on to a little more serious stuff, depending on your perception of it. Something else that was, I guess, one of the big stories coming out this week was Goldberg and The Fiend. And this story I did not see coming. We all knew Goldberg was going to return to SmackDown, and he did. And I know Hogan was on this week, and I didn't get your take on this yet. And I wanted to know, do you take this seriously if Goldberg versus The Fiend, and now Hogan this week gets himself involved and says that, well, I'll see you at the Hall of Fame. So I don't know if that is something implicating at WrestleMania, or if it is just a, hey, brother, I'll see you when, you know, the whole group's together at the Hall of Fame. So do you take this seriously with Goldberg and The Fiend? Is there any possibility, my God, is there any possibility that Goldberg takes out The Fiend and captures the Universal Championship?
As much as I don't want to say it, I think there is a possibility. I could see it being a quick title change if they need to go that route. And if, honestly, I think it depends on how serious they are with having Roman Reigns win the title back at WrestleMania. Because I think with how delicate his response was at the Rumble, I think maybe that could have been a wake-up call if that, like I said, is their ultimate goal with having him go over for the title at WrestleMania. I can see them not wanting to have him go against The Fiend because he would, in my opinion, most likely get booed against The Fiend, especially it being at WrestleMania and being for the title. So if they want Roman to go over, I can see them putting the title on Goldberg to have Goldberg face Roman Reigns at WrestleMania and having Roman beat Goldberg, and then moving the Fiend on to whomever else, whether it's Undertaker, whoever. So I think that could be a safe route if that's what they're doing, or they could not care and still end up having Roman Reigns versus the Fiend and whatnot for the title. But I don't know. I kind of feel like if they are set with having Roman win at WrestleMania, they may not want to have it be against the Fiend. So it wouldn't surprise me if Goldberg won the title at Super Showdown. But if I had to answer and make a prediction right now, I would say no. I would say that the Fiend retains, but it would not shock me if Goldberg won here. And the whole thing with the Fiend and Hogan really quick, I thought it was really cool, the Firefly Funhouse episode, how they had that breaking news with, you know, like this, the filing is paid for by the Firefly Funhouse, just like the NWO used to do. So I like the little callbacks that they did with it, and it was pretty entertaining. And wouldn't it be cool if, because when Hogan said, "I'll see you at the Hall of Fame," it was kind of weird, right? Like, it was such a random placement. Like, I know he was there to promote the NWO being inducted this year, but it was just, to me, it stood out as being odd that of all the next events in the next few months, like, he chose the Hall of Fame to mention that to the Fiend. And what if, like, the Fiend makes an appearance at the Hall of Fame? What if they start something there? Not saying that there it's going to lead to a match, but what if the Fiend, when Hogan's at the podium accepting it, what if the rest of the guys start walking to the back and then all the lights break down and it's just Hogan on the stage and the Fiend makes an appearance?
Wow. Yeah, they're...
Because Hogan would not have to take a bump, you know?
No.
Just hit the mandible claw.
That's what's great about this move is, I mean, he's been attacking legends since he started, and although we're all supposed to forget that he attacked Braun Strowman, that just got kind of swept under the rug. That's a definite possibility. The only concern I have with that, while I would see the shockingness of it, because we've never seen anything wrestling related, storyline related, happen during a Hall of Fame ceremony of any kind. And
what other character to change that up with?
No doubt.
Because it's simple.
The only opposition I think would be that, you know, you'd have to argue that this would be worth breaking the sanctity of the Hall of Fame ceremony, what it means. And that is, you know, characters and storylines don't matter. It's about the men and women who have spent their lives, you know, in making an impact in this business. And again, there's two schools of thought, and you could make an argument for both sides. And certainly Hogan's comments would allude to that being a possibility, and I could be sold on it. But then you also change the perception of what the Hall of Fame is, which, you know, again, you're breaking that sanctity of what the Hall of Fame means to the audience and to the wrestlers and to everyone who has helped make that person who they are and the impact that they've had. You've also kind of changed it to, well, this is a serious ceremony, but it also could have storylines happen. And again, I'm not for it or against it. It would be a hell of my God, social media would explode because it's never happened ever since the Hall of Fame started. So, wow. I'm for it. But the problem is Hogan, I don't need to see Hogan in another match. And I don't know what the payoff would be. I mean, it would be a shocking moment to attack the biggest, you know, draw in the history of the business. But it also would be, well, what's the end game other than the shock value? Because Hogan's, you know, 80 years old at this point. I mean, he can't have another match. I don't need to see him have another match. So interesting for sure. I you know, and as far as the Goldberg thing, kind of we're going backwards. I could see him winning. Would I do it? No, although I'm sure Vince has his appetite wet by Roman Reigns versus Goldberg of spear versus spear. I can see the tagline now. But really, WrestleMania is about building throughout the year. It's not necessarily about having, you know, a legend come in and for a short period of time go against a guy that's been built all year when you have another guy who is in the same position as the champion. I mean, you would want both guys who have clearly been on a collision course and have been rumored to for a very long time now to finally collide. And I know it's predictable, but I still think the Fiend versus Reigns is where you want to go at WrestleMania. I mean, there's nowhere else for Reigns to go. There's nowhere else for Wyatt to go. I mean, they are clearly headed on a collision course. So I don't think Goldberg's going to win, but man, would I bet money on it? No, because I could see Vince being very tempted by that, by the spear versus spear at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and you know, again, we've seen crazier things happen. So while I don't want it to happen, I would not be shocked to see Goldberg win. And not for nothing, like, it could be a cool match, Roman versus Goldberg. But yeah, I'm not even against The Fiend and Roman Reigns at this point, honestly. I just kind of want to stop speculating on it and just know for sure and just, right, you know. Right. You know, and get to it.
What gets me worried is every time that Vince knows that the large perception is out there that, oh, so-and-so is going to, you know, win the match, or there's a match coming that we all know is going to come. Let's just get to it. Vince has a way of really shaking things up. We've seen it at WrestleMania when it was Brock versus Lesnar and Brock versus Roman. And we all thought, oh, Roman's just going to win. Let's just get to it. And Vince swerved us and Brock won at WrestleMania, and then he won at Super Showdown against Reigns in a steel cage match. And ironically, Roman Reigns is again in a steel cage match against King Corbin at Super Showdown.
Which crazy. Is
kind of weird. I don't know if there's any purpose or any kind of intention there. I don't think, but it's just weird. So you have that, and then eventually Reigns won it at SummerSlam. So I think this match is going to happen, but the way it goes down, especially in this big of a magnitude of a match, Vince has a way every time something like this that is just so foregone conclusion, it's a fait accompli that Roman's going to beat The Fiend. And we don't even have this match official yet. And like you said, I just want it official so we can talk about it.
Yeah.
So that's what's kind of concerning to me of how obvious this match is. As I think it's the right decision, but Vince, when he sees something this obvious that the fans perceive as obvious, he tends to go another direction or completely flip-flop the finish.
And that's why I wouldn't be surprised to see Goldberg win, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't see them necessarily changing Roman's position that we're all, you know, I guess speculating that it's going to be in the title position. I don't see that changing for the SmackDown side. I see if anything's going to change who the actual champion is going into it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's true too. I mean, I still think The Fiend got the belt too soon. I still feel that way. I'm still smelling the stench of Hell in a Cell with Seth and Wyatt. It was the absolute turning point of when The Fiend stopped becoming or stopped feeling so damn special. And he still is. He still is. He's done, you know, some, I think there's been some recovery there, but boy, that was so damaging. And yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it's Goldberg versus somebody else. And it's just a grudge match of Reigns versus The Fiend. And there's no title on the line. But then the fact of, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe not. I don't know. Because there's also the Elimination Chamber coming up, right? The Elimination Chamber is going to have the winner of that match face the Universal Champion, which we presume is going to be Bray Wyatt. So I think it would do a disservice to not have Bray Wyatt come into WrestleMania as Universal Champion, given all the build he's had, all of the fanfare, just his character being absolutely, you know, lit on fire in the summertime and then obviously hit the skids at in October. But I really think to have Goldberg come in a less than part-time position, a schedule that's even less than Brock Lesnar, to just come in, carry the belt to Mania and then drop it, I don't like the taste of that. It doesn't sit well with me when guys are there 11 other months out of the year busting their ass and getting to where they need to be to have this guy come in. And I have nothing against Goldberg. It's just, this isn't 1998 anymore. You know, I don't, great shape. I'm a great guy, but it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense for Mania.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%.
All right, well, moving on to a little bit about the women here. And this match surprised me on SmackDown, Carmella and Bayley, for the Women's Championship. I thought it was, you know, that match was, I thought, well executed from the perspective of the layout of the match. They missed some things, you know, there were a few sloppy moments, particularly in the beginning of the match. You know, I was worried about it. And then as the match went on, it seemed to get better. And the Vancouver crowd was awesome, which absolutely helped out the show. and they had I think a great finish, and Carmella and Bayley, I believe, put on a better match than I would have ever expected for the women's championship, only to have Bayley use the ropes without the referee seeing and get the three count. So a couple things. Obviously the match, loved it. I shouldn't say loved it. I liked it. I thought it was well constructed, and the crowd certainly helped. The other thing that I noticed from this was Bayley, who got true heat for the first time in I don't know how long from the crowd. And I don't know if that's because Sasha's not there to tail along and you can just see Bayley on her own being obnoxious or what it is. But I love that Bayley got real heat. And the championship match was, I think, good quality. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with you on everything. I think it was a really good match. I was really, really impressed with Carmella. I think it was a really solid match for her. And I've never not been a fan of Carmella. I just think she was one of those who really didn't get enough in-ring time to really continue developing. But she's a really good character, and she's, you know, a really entertaining act. You know, her and R-Truth had some really good moments. So I think she's pretty valuable to the company, and I'm happy she got a good match with Bayley on the stage that she got it in. I'm curious to see who they end up having win this week, or this coming week rather, between Carmella and Naomi, to see who goes on to face Bayley at Super Showdown. My prediction is Naomi. But I really enjoyed the match, just like you did. I think Bayley is finally getting that opportunity to shine on her own. I think whatever is going on with Sasha Banks and whatever reason she's not on TV right now, I think Bayley is kind of benefiting from. So I'm happy for Bayley as well, and I'm happy she retained the title here. I'm happy she's going to go on and have that good moment at the Super Showdown show. So I'm happy with this direction for right now. I think they finally found a groove and something for Bayley to do, and something that can continue on from week to week. So I'm here for it. I'm not overly excited for it, but it's solid.
I will say that it feels, the SmackDown Women's Championship feels more relevant, and it's getting more airtime than it has in like a month.
It started the show.
2 months. Yes. And it needs some notoriety. It needs some spotlight. It's been missing. And I think Bayley hasn't got a fair shake as a heel yet. I mean, she went heel, and then we didn't hear from much from her, and she kind of hangs her head and, you know, walks to the ring. We're all supposed to dislike her because of that. And I was a big fan of the turn, and I still am, but I think you saw how good of a heel she could be this past week when she got more mic time and more air time and showed you that she can still go in the ring. You know, she kind of reminded you of that. And yeah, it wasn't a perfect match, but that's fine. Again, these two haven't had a whole lot of one-on-ones inside the ring, and especially this length, in quite a while. And Carmella, certainly, I think this benefited her too, from kind of being the comedy segment with R-Truth, which it worked, but it was time to move on from that. And she has. And I liked that she was put back into a position of credibility where she might have very well beaten Bayley had it not been for Bayley cheating to retain her championship. And now you have Naomi thrown into the mix. And likely, like you, I think she's going to be the one to face Bayley at Super Showdown. I think she should be. And my concern is, though, as we head towards WrestleMania, there doesn't seem to be that one female that is currently on the roster. And of course, there could be call-ups from NXT. You could have somebody return like Nia Jax. But barring any of that, I don't see somebody currently on the roster that one-on-one would be a awesome fit for WrestleMania. Nothing on the roster, SmackDown's women's roster, screams WrestleMania, gotta put these two together, other than maybe Sasha turning. And I have very mixed feelings about that. So my fear is, outside of a Sasha turn, that this is just going to be a multi-women's championship match at WrestleMania. Do you feel that same way, or you have a different idea?
No, I kind of agree. I think if it's, yes and no. I think what the easy answer would be is a Sasha Banks turn and Sasha versus Bayley. I would love to see that match, and I think those two wrestlers themselves, they deserve a moment like that. But storyline wise right now, like, they would have to have Sasha come back and cost and like have it really be impactful and have a strong story going into it at this point. But and I think they could do it. I think both of them could actually pull that off. Sasha is a really good promo. And I think, yeah, she's not, she's better on the mic as a heel because I feel like she has like a different type of freedom. But I think going against someone like Bayley, she could handle pretty much any version of her role and it be believable. And I think Bayley as well. So I think if they're not going to go that route, it wouldn't honestly surprise me to see Bayley versus Lacey Evans again, if they're going to do a one-on-one route. She's kind of, I don't think we saw her at all this week, unless there was like a video package or something I missed. But
no. They said that she's returning next week.
Okay. So I don't know if they try to build her back up and gain more momentum going into WrestleMania and have them resume their feud. But yeah, honestly, I think with all the hype behind Becky and Shayna and Charlotte and Rhea Ripley, I think, unfortunately, SmackDown's title may not need to be as big as the other three, as bad as I feel saying that for Bayley. And I don't mean it to be disrespectful, but I feel like that's not, and I think out of the three, that's probably the lower priority right now.
Stay right there. The WWE podcast will return after this quick break.
This episode is brought to you by the Can of Spam podcast. Sometimes you just need to turn your brain off and indulge in some pure entertainment. Let's stop lying to ourselves. Everyone loves a good poop story or dad joke. Give in to your inhibitions and tune in to the Can of Spam podcast with Nick and Kavika. Much like a talk show, they're often joined by a guest and play through hilarious segments like which superpower is best, lightsaber toenails, or tiny booger grenades. Sometimes they examine age-old questions like do fish have ears? Most episodes end in a comical draft competition. They take turns making selections for their team based on a topic or scenario such as, you're stranded on an island. What four items do you want with you? So guys, go check out the Can of Spam podcast. They're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and iHeartRadio. You can also follow them on Twitter at Can of Spam Pod. So if you guys love video games, then you got to check out the Hammer and Trickster YouTube channel. The channel was created by two veterans. One was from the Army, the other from the Navy. And what they do is play Rainbow Six Siege. They upload a new video every single week, and they play other video games as well. But you got to check this out. If you love watching raw, unedited video gameplay with the shoot 'em up style games, you got to check this channel out. Again, the channel is called Hammer and Trickster. They also add some badass rock music, and you can just watch them kick ass for hours. So head on over to YouTube and just subscribe to Hammer and Trickster. Trust me, you won't regret it.
Welcome back to the WWE Podcast. Let's get back to more great wrestling audio.
In the pecking order, there's no question about it.
For Mania purposes.
Yeah, for Mania, yes. For Mania, I just don't see that this being a top priority. Not that it shouldn't be, but I just don't see it becoming a top priority. Again, you could have call-ups. Nia Jax, I don't know why I keep thinking Nia Jax is just going to pop out of the woodwork. I don't know what my obsession is with that, but I'm waiting on her to come back. I think she's suited best to be a heel, so if she's going to be a heel, obviously she wouldn't challenge Bayley for the Women's Championship outside of a multi-person match where there's other babyfaces to balance it out. So, this is a tough one come Mania season. And while we're already on the women's division, you touched on it because this is another huge item coming out of the week. On Raw this week, Becky Lynch gets bitten by Shayna Baszler and draws, blood on Becky. Becky ends up having to resist going to the hospital and treating the EMTs like dogs and then driving to the hospital herself, apparently, driving it back like it's Stone Cold in 1999, and then coming out and cutting, a really good promo against Shayna. Very serious, you better find me before I find you. I love that. People seem to be down more on this segment than I was. I'm kind of poking fun at Becky being a bit of a bully to people that are trying to help her. I didn't like that so much. She's got a bit of an arrogant side to her, but I liked Shayna coming in and doing this. I know it's a little cheesy. People are calling her a vampire and all this kind of stuff. I liked it because when is the last time we've ever seen that? When's the last time someone's come back or debuted or re-debuted or come in? Or for any that match or that matter, anytime, bitten the back of somebody's neck and drawn, quote, blood, and done that, and the look on Shayna's face and the blood covering her mouth and Becky screaming, I like this. I know people could have said that, oh, she could have come in and just stared her down. Well, why? You got people talking about this more than if she did that. So, I don't know. I seem to be more on the side of I liked it. I wasn't going gaga over it, but I thought it was a much better way to introduce her, and people are talking about it. I don't know. What did you think about this? Are you on the other side of the camp where it's kind of cheesy and that kind of thing?
No, I actually agree with you 100%. Again, I did not have that imagined for her, I guess, official debut on Raw in a one-on-one capacity. But I wasn't completely against it. Like you said, it's different, you know, and honestly, I don't see it being something that she does every week because she has one opponent in mind, which is Becky Lynch. It's not like she just randomly made her debut and declared that she's going after the whole women's division and this is going to be her thing going week to week, like biting people and drawing blood. Like, I don't see it like that. I think it was a one-time shock factor. It worked, honestly. Becky reacted like she reacted, and on it, like, the people who were really, like, against the whole ambulance thing and, like, it wasn't realistic, like you said, I'm so glad you mentioned it, like, I immediately thought of Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, how many times did we see him drive random machines and, like, vehicles and do crazy things with cement trucks? Like, none of that stuff was legal. None of that stuff is reasonable if you think about it, but we enjoyed it back then because it was Stone Cold Steve Austin and he was a bad you-know-what. So it's just funny to me how different the mindset is nowadays and how quickly people are to just, like, bash it. And again, is it reasonable and logical? No. Like, would she got arrested? And of course. Like, but if we're just thinking WWE land, like, this stuff happens all the time. Like, people flip over ambulances and cars. Like, it's not that far-fetched. So that was what was kind of surprising to me. And of course, yeah, like you said, like the whole blood angle with Shayna, that was shocking. And would I have picked that specifically? Probably no. I probably would not even have thought about something like that. But again, I don't see that being something that she does week to week. And I think starting next week, we'll see the aftermath from it because we didn't see Shayna again, whereas we saw Becky come back and, you know, cut that promo. And I agree with you. I thought it was great. I loved how she ended it. It was just very, like, it leaves you wanting more. So I'm hooked on this to see how Shayna reacts going forward and see what version of Shayna Baszler we get starting next week.
Me too. I know that people, and I understand the argument against, oh, it's cartoonish, but honestly, is this the most cartoonish thing you've seen WWE do? Really? I mean, look what Braun Strowman's done, right, in his career, the silly things that he's done and tipped over and pulled apart and porta potties. I mean, come on, folks. This was to me, while people would say it's unrealistic, you can't deny the execution of it with these two. I mean, they sold the hell out of it. I loved the execution of it. These women were all
tough.
In.
Like, yes. That image was what they wanted, and it was solid. Like, it grabbed me, and that's what mm-hmm. it was for. That was the purpose behind it.
Exactly. Whether you loved it or hated it, the fact of the matter is people are talking about it more than if all of a sudden her music hit. Oh, my God, it's a big moment. She just goes face-to-face with Becky, and one of them punches the other, and the other leaves. I mean, that to me, this one to me is, it creates more controversy. It adds, I think, more of a social media buzz than the alternative. And as you said, if someone presented this to me, I don't know if I would have gone with it. But seeing how it was executed and, you know, the way it was done, I really have no complaints. I mean, I don't know. I think this was well done. And now you're looking forward to, well, how's Becky's neck? You know, are they going to follow up with her medical condition? What are they going to do? I mean, this is clearly leading to a match at WrestleMania. There's no question about that, which of that kind of tells me, though, and this is not necessarily a bad thing, that Ronda Rousey is off the table, at least for a one-on-one. My God, I don't need another triple threat of her, Baszler, and Rousey, or her, Baszler, and Becky. I don't.
Could you imagine if that happened?
No. We all know the history of Baszler and Rousey. You wouldn't want to, you know, shoot everything you've got, all of your ammunition in one match. There's stories to tell on both ends, and eventually, if you want to bring a triple threat, you can. But right now, I mean, this kind of tells me that the WWE got the cue that Rousey may be out for Mania, and that's fine. That's fine. I'm not necessarily sad about that because of how strong of a candidate Baszler is for Becky. I think that those two have a great story to tell. They're very similar in their demeanor. Shayna Baszler is a certified badass the way she comes off. They had an amazing promo heading up to Survivor Series this past year. There's a lot they can follow up on. This storyline, to me, is far from over. I'm looking really forward to what Becky has to say next week, what her medical condition is. This was great. The only casualty here was Asuka, because this happened after she beat Asuka in really an enhancement-type talent match. I mean, this match was incredibly short. I think Asuka, once again, is being bit by the WrestleMania bug. Every time WrestleMania season comes up, she gets the short end of the stick, whether it's losing the championship 2 weeks before the event, or now being just an enhancement talent for Becky as she goes on to bigger and better things. So to me, the casualty here is Asuka.
For sure, yeah, and you kind of almost forget that they even had a match earlier in the show, and that's what prompted all this, because Shayna came in after the match. You're absolutely right with that. And Becky did debut that new finisher. Did they give an official name to it? But it was kind of like a rock bottom.
Yeah,
it was very similar to the rock bottom. So that was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the name is, but that's, I mean, it looked very, very, very similar to that.
She did it well. It was executed very well.
Yeah. It was, I don't know. I'm sure she'll come up with a name. They'll come up with a name. I like how she has a finish that's not a submission. That's good. I think that having, a submission finish and a pin finish is great. Obviously, Undertaker, bit of a stretch there, but he had kind of the same dynamic forever. He was just a pin guy. He would have the chokeslam, the tombstone, the last ride, and then he brought in Hell's Gate. And he beat how many guys with that? So it's great to add finishes to your arsenal and have both ends, and that way there's two options to a finish. So this clearly is something that she's doing. I don't know if what the name of it's going to be, but it was very similar to a bookend or a rock bottom, and I was fine with it. I loved it. So nonetheless, I'm looking forward to this story. I think it was well done. Moving on, though, to something that we haven't even touched on, and that's Randy Orton and Matt Hardy. And the program that, first of all, Randy Orton is being reborn right now. Like, as we speak, he is being reborn in WWE. And I think that he has gotten one of the, I think, biggest shots of momentum that anybody has gotten in a long time. We're seeing a motivated Randy Orton, and my God, what a difference it is. Where Randy Orton was just kind of floating in the SmackDown world for a few years as a legacy guy, hitting the RKO, getting an occasional main event feuds and then pulling himself back. And he was just kind of there. Great guy, built, very, very solid in the ring, doesn't even have to care to be good. And now all of a sudden he's thrust into this storyline with Edge. And we all know what happened a few weeks ago on Raw. One of the most shocking moments, one of the most biggest moments that WWE's had in I don't know how many years, where people have nuclear heat for Randy. The RKO isn't even over anymore, which is insane. So now you have Matt Hardy come out this week and defends Edge. And I'm glad he addressed the fact that, hey, out of all people defending Edge here, I know that Edge and I have a history. We all know what happened with Lita. We all know what happened when he returned in 2006 or whatever it was. And I remember that very vividly. And the match that they had at, I forget, the pay-per-view. And all of that. And so I'm glad he brought that up. But it was a heartfelt, we invented the TLC match. We went up and down the road together. We slept in the same room together to save a few bucks. And Randy Orton ends up, hitting the RKO and hitting him with the concerto. And Matt Hardy is laid out, adding more heat to Randy. So I'll stop there and get your thoughts.
Yeah, again, I love what they're doing with Randy Orton. I love that this is a slow burn type of thing and that they're really dragging this out week by week. And I think in a way, too, we're kind of seeing Randy Orton show less and less remorse each week as well. I think just with how he kind of gave Matt the like a split second there, but then, ended up attacking him and hitting him with the concerto and all that. I'm surprised that we're seeing the no holds barred match tomorrow night though, between the two. Did you hear about that?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So I'm rather surprised that they're having Matt come back so quickly after taking the concerto. Unless it's because I'm pretty sure Matt's contract is expiring soon. I don't know the exact date. So maybe that's a factor. Maybe it was either this week or never type of thing. And if that's the case, then I hope that it's at least a substantial type of match, and I think it will be, since it's no holds barred. I think it will actually be a good match, and I think that's something that Matt deserves. And I think this was, well, this past week was like such a great promo from Matt, and I think it really shows that he still has it. I don't think any of the fans ever doubted that, but I think it should have been a wake-up call for WWE that Matt Hardy has so much talent. They just let him be and just let him fully have creative control over what he envisions his character being. I think it could have been something huge, and that were for at least a substantial portion of the audience. So I just think it's a miss there, but I'm happy with what they're doing with Randy. I'm happy that they, like you said, acknowledged the past between Edge that wasn't really that I guess, great to acknowledge. But I think it's good, and I think it's fun to see them actually have depth in this storyline. And I'm curious to see if they end up having Christian come out. Do you think Christian will be out in about 2 weeks? Do you think that's where they go next, or what do you think it happens after Matt?
It's got to be Christian. I know Christian is up. He is on that the list of Randy Orton. There is something. I mean, that has to happen, right? To continue to build this heat. Where Christian, like you said, comes out next week or the week after and tries to reason with Randy, and maybe you think he's seen the light and he's going to be apologetic, and bam, RKO, and he does the same thing to Christian, or he threatens to do the same thing, and out comes Edge. My thinking though is, when are we going to see Edge again? Right? As far as I know, I haven't heard any medical update, storyline wise, anyway. I know that Matt Hardy is going to be there tomorrow night. I keep saying next week, but it's tomorrow. He's going to be there for a No Falls Count Anywhere street fight with Randy Orton. Does that in and of itself lend an opening for Edge to return? Or do you think that it's a stage that they want to make bigger? Maybe they do it at Super Showdown, although I don't know how they would do it considering Randy's not in a match. Or do they wait until Elimination Chamber and stretch this out even further? Where do you see Edge coming back to make his triumphant return to at least put a bit of a beating on Randy, because I'm sure he'll retreat. He's a heel. Where do you think this will happen, where Edge finally comes back and they make this match official, I guess?
With how sadistic Randy Orton has been in the past when it comes to characters like a Stephanie McMahon. When he had his feud with Triple H, and I'm pretty sure he handcuffed Stephanie to the ring ropes, or he handcuffed one of them, and
Triple
he would
H.
just, yeah, yeah. And mm-hmm. I just remember that was like the sadistic part of Randy Orton when they really let him go like a different route. So a weird part of me, especially with Beth Phoenix being an active wrestler, quote unquote, she was obviously just in the Rumble. I know she doesn't obviously do it every week, but we'll just call her an active wrestler for now. Part of me thinks they're going to have the match with Matt and Randy Orton on Monday. The following week, they may play up the Christian card, or may hold it out a week or two and then have Randy Orton and Christian confront each other. But then I think we see Randy Orton show up on NXT 1 week. And I really think that when they're either opening the show or somewhere in the middle of the show where they're focusing on the three announcers, I think that we're going to see Randy Orton show up from behind and just, I don't know if he necessarily RKOs Beth or
do you think
something.
Do they dare go there?
I think they do, and I think the following week, because that'll obviously be on a Wednesday, I think that following Monday, I think that's when Edge shows up, because I think Edge, I can see Randy Orton hitting Beth with an RKO, holding her face and saying, I want an answer, Edge, do we have a match at Mania? And just something to that effect, and then forcing Edge to show up, no matter the condition that he's in. He can show up in a neck brace or whatever, but yeah, I just have a weird feeling that it's going that route, because it's Randy Orton. Maybe if it was a different guy involved with Edge, maybe, but I just, with the type of character that Randy Orton is, it wouldn't surprise me if they went that route. And why not?
Oh,
Beth is
God.
Right there. Like, it's perfect.
You talk about building heat. Right now, Randy Orton's got the most heat out of any heel in the
company.
Or
what if they do it at a takeover? What if they do it this Sunday at takeover? Or tonight? What if they
Stop.
Did it tonight?
I don't know.
Because we haven't watched it.
Damn, I know. So people listening to this are probably...
I completely forgot it was tonight.
I know. So, wow, that you laid out a whole bunch of heat that Randy Orton's got. The bit, like I just said, he's got the most heat of any heel in the company. He has shown you why he is who he is and reminded you when he actually tries and is halfway motivated, he can be this damn good. Yeah, you talk about Stephanie McMahon. I remember he DDT'd Stephanie or RKO'd her and handcuffed Triple H and then kissed her while Triple H was handcuffed. So you could have him, obviously Matt Hardy, which Edge doesn't care too much about, given the fact that they're not exactly, you know, exchanging Christmas cards, but right. they but have a mutual start. Respect. Yes, it's a start. Then you have Christian, and then, my God, imagine the heat on Randy if he RKO's Beth Phoenix and what Edge was going to want to do. You're going to want to tune in. I mean, that is must-see TV. To see what Edge is going to do in response to that. And again, you and I seem to fantasy book things and we get ourselves riled up for things that sometimes don't happen. But there's an opportunity here for you talk about heat. This would skyrocket Randy Orton to the next level of heel, true heel, not you know, cheering you because you're a cool heel, but true, like, I hate you. I want to see someone kick your ass. And you take in the fact that, you know, this is a PG environment. The only time you have anybody retaliate against women, and the only thing I could think of is Randy Orton, out of all people, retaliate against Nia Jax at last year's Royal Rumble after she attacked some of the men and she ended up getting RKO'd. But she attacked them first. So to have him really fly in the face of PG TV and what WWE has stood for over the last, since 2008 when they went PG, to see how they could go. And this is a safe move. It's not too violent. It's I think one of the safest finishing maneuvers that can be delivered.
She's a wrestler, so she knows how to take a finisher.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't think the stars would ever align more perfectly than they will for a situation like this, like, to capitalize on. It's perfect. It doesn't have to be anything drawn out. You hit her with the RKO, you pick her head up, you make some declaration to Edge, and it's done. Like, I just, like, it's just perfect. Like, it will hurt me if they don't do it. Something with Ed, or something with Beth. Just something.
They have to. They have to do something. I mean, so I'm getting all riled up about this because I can just see how good this can be. I mean, it's already really good. But you want to talk about doing something that is just seriously catapults this thing and makes you want to just get to WrestleMania to see Edge get his hands on Randy. And I, you know what I hope, and I've mentioned this before, so I apologize if I'm repeating, is have a Shawn Michaels, Vince McMahon, 2006, 2007, whenever they had their match at WrestleMania, where every single Monday Night Raw for like 2 months straight, Vince McMahon got the one up on Shawn Michaels. I mean, it was constant with the Spirit Squad or Shane McMahon interfering. Yeah. I mean, it was constant where Shawn just could not get his hands on Vince for 2 months. And like, that's what I would want for Randy and Edge, is to have Randy continually either beat down people he likes, beat Edge himself down, where Edge maybe gets a quick few punches in, goes for a spear, and then ends up getting cut off by, I don't know, somebody that ends up aligning with Randy to take the heat. So I wouldn't mind that. I mean, you talk about an old school heat building formation or formula. This is how you do it, man.
Randy recruit Curt Hawkins and Zack Ryder. They were edge heads in the past. He can even convert them. And Randy's always been, in my opinion, pretty solid when he's the leader of a faction or in a faction of some sort, because he feeds off really well off of other people that he's working with. And young guys, I think, you know, nothing long term. I think that, you know, just to be those decoys or just to get, you know, just that other little dig in an edge. You could go so many different directions with it.
I'm so pumped about this. I mean, this is great stuff. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this. This is a match to me right now. If you're going to point to the match I want to see the most at WrestleMania, you know, nothing's announced, I know, but the informal matches that are there on the card and pencil, this is the match I want to see the most right now. I mean, I just do. So,
yeah.
Whew. Okay. Moving on to the other items. I mean, just got a few left here. McIntyre and MVP, their segment this past week. I think it's good to have McIntyre out there on a weekly basis. I think they should, because I don't want McIntyre only following TV time that Brock has, which means Brock's going to be there one out of every 3-4 weeks. McIntyre needs to be there to be in the eyes of fans, to remind them who he is, to kind of make him more likable. And I think he was this past week with MVP trying to get on his side as a business partner, and obviously takes the Claymore in the VIP lounge over the couch. And I thought this was good. Again, this keeps McIntyre in the eyes of fans while Brock is doing whatever Brock does for 3 weeks out of the month. So, I don't know. I thought this was good. It made him more likable. We saw the Claymore, and I have nothing to complain about. And I'm looking forward to the Brock and McIntyre match in just, 6 weeks?
Yeah, yeah, just about. I agree with you again. I really like what they're doing with McIntyre. I like how each week they're kind of going the slow burn route with him as well and allowing his character to build and really be developed as the babyface version, and just letting us really see his personality and see what kind of guy he is and what he stands for and why he cares so much about this and just his journey up until this point. So I just like that they're giving us a chance with him, where I think they kind of didn't give Seth that chance last year. I think it was just assumed that Seth was going to win the Rumble and Seth was going to be Lesnar at Mania. So they didn't really need to, you know, elaborate much more story-wise on it. Whereas I think this year they are kind of taking a different approach with Drew and allowing him the time to build. And I think segments like this past week was perfect. I'm not sure how you continue that going forward, but yeah, I like what they did this week with Drew. I think he's the guy, and I'm so ready for their match at WrestleMania as well. I think it's going to be a good hard-hitting match, and they both deserve it.
And I'm not, you know, or I guess I'm saying I'm not. I should be glad that WWE is not trying to give us too much of McIntyre. They're being very selective.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, overexposing him in 8 segments on the show. They're giving us just enough of McIntyre to not feel filled. Okay, like, hey, okay, we get it. You know, we've seen this guy. They're giving us enough to where I feel like I want more, and that's good. And McIntyre is feeling very likable. If anyone has seen the special they have on him on the WWE Network, I don't know if it was 365 or what it may be. Maybe it's not 365, but they come and McIntyre is doing this interview and talks about how much this business means and, you know, what he learned outside of WWE and coming back and being the chosen one originally and all that kind of stuff. It's really good.
Yeah, I need to go see it. I haven't had a chance to see that one.
It makes him so likable because he just can turn it on when the lights go on. But when the lights go off and the red light goes off, he is like a super likable guy, which, again, it certainly bodes well for his face character coming up. So one of the last few things that I want to ask you about, Ricochet and Brock Lesnar, right? Is there any possibility that Ricochet wins at Super Showdown? I guess it's kind of old habits die hard. I know this isn't a prediction show, but every time you're on, I feel like it just kind of is by de facto.
Right.
Any possibility that Ricochet wins?
Sadly, I don't think so. I just don't see it. Not right now. Maybe if this was a different time of year, maybe, but not right now. I think it'll be a fun match. I think Ricochet is going to take some crazy bumps for him, and it's going to be something fun. But I think it's going to be like 5-10 minutes max. And I think, I don't know. I don't know. I don't see it going well for Ricochet. I think it'll be entertaining, but I don't see it going well for him, sadly.
And I put up a poll. I don't know if you saw it. On Twitter 5 days ago, whatever it was.
No.
I asked people, what do you think will be the match that is the longer match between Goldberg and Wyatt and Ricochet and Brock Lesnar, right? Because then you think about it, I mean, like, which is going to be the longer match?
It's true.
So I'm trying to find the results here. It's 53-47. So it was by a hair. Goldberg and the Fiend is the winner of what people think will be the longer match. And I don't know. You can make a case both ways, right?
Yeah. And as I was saying, the 5 to 10 minutes, I think I want it to be 5 to 10 minutes for Ricochet's, you know, like, I guess for his benefit, but I then think about how long Kofi Kingston's match was, and I'm just like, yeah, does Ricochet even last the 5 to 10 minutes? Like in this match right now, I don't know, man. But yeah, I don't see him winning here.
To me, I don't think he'll get the Kofi Kingston treatment because I think they view Ricochet as an up-and-coming star that has a lot of, that has a high ceiling, whereas they kind of know where Kofi Kingston is. They've kind of defined him over the 12 years he's been in WWE. I don't think they'll give him the 8-second treatment. So I think Ricochet will get a quick, a few hope spots, use his quickness. They'll sell the story on that being his only leg to stand on, no pun intended, and be able to try to outspeed Brock Lesnar. Hit him quick and run, hit and run. That'll be the story they'll tell, where they get a couple of hope spots, ultimately to just get, Germaned and F5'd. I mean, that's ultimately what's going to happen. So it's, to me, about just giving Ricochet some time in the spotlight with the biggest star that WWE has. And let's make no mistake, Brock Lesnar is the biggest star WWE has. To give him a little bit of exposure on a big stage, on a pay-per-view, whether you love the pay-per-view or not, it's still a pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia. So it is what it is there. But he is ultimately there to just get exposure to see if he can hang for a little while with Brock Lesnar. I think that's ultimately the goal.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So we have a question from somebody, and then there's just a couple more things I want your quick take on. So I have and you saw this, J. Kim Creatives asks, HBK versus Stone Cold, who's your greatest of all time between the two? What would you pick between HBK and Stone Cold? Who's the GOAT? Do you want me to go first on this?
I mean, I think I know your answer, so yeah, go for it.
This is so boring. It's just people know my answer, damn it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotta be Steve. I mean, people know that he's my favorite. This is a super boring answer. I know that it's not cool or whatever. It's not unique, or it's not anything that's gonna shock people. I think Austin is the GOAT, and the reason I think he's the GOAT is, I mean, look at financially, you're talking about dollars, he burned hotter than anyone. He may not have burned the longest, but he burned the hottest. Whether you're talking about, I think he eclipsed Hogan, he eclipsed Warrior, he eclipsed The Rock, and again, I'm talking about for the short time he was there, how hot he was. He was the business. There was nobody hotter. It was all about Stone Cold. HBK is a guy that was amazing in the ring and arguably better than Stone Cold was in the ring. I don't even think that's actually a question. He was better in the ring, and I think he's the greatest in-ring performer of all time. That doesn't mean that he was the hottest of all time. He certainly could have a match with anybody and make them look like $1 million, and he had some absolute intangibles, and he obviously was part of DX and had his second coming when he returned in 2002 and went on a 6-year run to have one of the best matches ever at WrestleMania with Undertaker at 25. But again, I have to go with the man that was just, there hasn't been anyone hotter since, before him or after him. So that's my answer. What about you?
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking like the greatest of all time, my answer would be Stone Cold Steve Austin as well, just because of the mainstream and what he did for the company as a whole. But for me personally, my favorite of all time was Shawn Michaels, because for me, when I truly was at the age to like really understand and appreciate wrestling was when Shawn came back in 2002. At that point, I think I was like maybe 10 or 11. So I was really at the age where I understood more so what was happening. So, and just seeing his rise and seeing his feud with Triple H, his feud with Triple H is one of the first ones that really got me hooked into wrestling, just because the emotion behind it, like seeing his comeback and just then he went on to win the title. Like that was just one of my first memories of professional wrestling. And that's why for me, Shawn will always be the greatest of all time in the ring and maybe the greatest performer. But like, if we're talking mainstream and as a whole and the impact on the company and the business, then obviously it would be Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, I do like that. I remember some of their feuds, Triple H and HBK. It's some of the best I've ever seen. I mean,
yeah, and just with every different opponent, like if you just think back, like even the matches he had with Shelton Benjamin and John Cena, just like these random people that are good in the ring, but he just took them to the next level. It was just amazing. Just no. Again, he's kind of like one of those, kind of like a Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, there hasn't really been another one, in my opinion, like him to just go out there. Maybe AJ Styles is close. Like, obviously, there's people who are close to him, but in my opinion, just the total package, all around performer, like promo and ring, just grabbing and stealing the show. You know, no pun intended. I just think he's the best.
I would agree with you. So I guess it depends on the lens you're looking at what GOAT
means.
Yeah,
that's kind of hard. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really hard. But yeah, I mean, geez.
But for sure, if you were to ask your average person, do you know who Stone Cold Steve Austin is, or do you know who Shawn Michaels is? 9 times out of 10, they're gonna know who Austin is before Michaels, as sad as it is to say. But your average person would definitely know who Steve Austin is, you know?
Oh, no question. I mean,
so I think if you're looking at it like that, then obviously him.
Because when you think about it too, when people, the most people ever in the history of mankind were watching wrestling, it was during the 90s and during when Austin led the charge of the Attitude Era. He was the face of the Attitude Era. He was a part of the reason why they defeated WCW. So more people know who Austin is because more people watched at that time, like 10 times more people watched at that time than they did when Michaels was at the top of his game. So more eyeballs were there when wrestling was hotter. So, yeah, but boy, that, I mean, you're making me want to go back and watch some of the matches with Triple H and HBK. I mean, I remember their match at Bad Blood 2003. I think that was the finale of it when actually Triple H ended up winning the whole thing. But some of their
matches,
and
their match at the Royal Rumble,
the last man standing.
The last man standing. I don't know if that was 02 or 03. It's right around that time frame, but man, when I tell you that match is one of my all-time favorites, just from the emotional value. Like, I'm picturing it now, just Shawn's face was just coated in blood. Like, it was just insane. Yeah, insane, right? Insane, but yeah, definitely go back and watch that for sure.
And and anybody who's going to watch it, so you might want to fast forward. I'm going to give you the end of that match. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So, fair warning, you've been warned. But when he finally hits Sweet Chin Music, and then can't make it to his feet for the 10 count. Oh, my God.
When I tell you heartbreak, yeah. Oh, my gosh, dude.
And, of course, real. Jim Ross at the, you know, being the announcer, certainly, my God, his voice is just stapled on so many big moments. Yeah, so, damn, I know what I'm YouTubing after we get off.
Right.
it's just, like you said, emotion. I mean, this his face, and he couldn't make it to his feet. So it ended up being a draw. Boy. All right, last two things, and these are just more of what you think may happen here, is what do you think Cena's going to be doing on SmackDown in 2 weeks? What is his purpose? Who do you think's going to end up coming out to interrupt, and do you think it leads to a WrestleMania program, or is he there just kind of for a one-off?
You know, I don't think this is a one-off. I don't think they would have announced it this far in advance and just hyped it like they are if it was a one-off. I think this is going to be the start for whatever he obviously does end up doing at WrestleMania. I've heard, and I'm kind of skeptical to even mention it, but I heard today that there's rumors of it being Elias, a one-on-one match with him and Elias. I would not be, like, that would not be my choice. I don't really know what I would do with Cena. I guess that kind of depends too on what he is looking to do. Like, there's so many different routes. Like, you could go like a complete newcomer and have like Velveteen Dream interrupt him on SmackDown if you want to do maybe a crossover like that, or you can have The Fiend interrupt him and they have a match against each other at WrestleMania. I don't know. It's so intriguing to me to see what he ends up doing this year, because I feel like he's getting at the point in his career where he doesn't really have that many matches left in him. Not saying he's not in great shape, of course, obviously, but he's becoming an established actor and he doesn't necessarily need wrestling. So I think we're obviously on the tail end of his career, so these matches should mean more. So I don't think it should just be a throwaway match. I think it should have something that has some substance into it. Not necessarily maybe for like a title, but just something that means something. You know what I mean? Not just like a quick 5-minute match or just a throwaway. Just if he's going to come back, let him do something meaningful. Right. He deserves it too, you know?
I agree. I don't want him to come back and make me feel like it's just a payday for him.
Yeah.
You know, And as I'm looking at the SmackDown roster, Elias could be, but the problem is Elias is a face. He's actually starting to get some good momentum as a babyface. I hope it's not Elias. I really do. The only other person I could think, I mean, you have Sheamus, who's just kind of running people over. You have, let's see, who was it?
You could do Daniel Bryan.
Yeah,
but I don't really know what the story would be.
But Daniel Bryan's the top babyface on SmackDown. I mean,
yeah.
You know, and then you have, well, it could be Baron Corbin, because unless he goes into an eternal feud with Roman Reigns after Super Showdown, that should be it, which will leave him open. So could it be Baron Corbin interrupting John Cena? It could be. I mean, to me, it's Baron Corbin.
I forgot all about him.
Sheamus. I mean, the heel. Roster isn't exactly really heavy here. I mean, you have also The Miz and John Morrison. Could they interrupt John Cena? They could. I'm looking at, I just don't see anybody that stands out to me. Lars Sullivan's not even there. So, yeah, I mean, I think it might be Baron Corbin coming out to interrupt them. That makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, I completely forgot about Baron.
Yeah, and again, my God, it better be over after Super Showdown with Roman Reigns. So,
dude.
Please. So,
what is it with Roman Reigns and his storylines just dragging out for months? Because Reed said the same thing when he was in the storyline with Daniel Bryan with the whole car accident and all that, you know, the nightmare stuff. Like, why does his storylines always drag out, it seems? It's just like they don't end when they... Like, it was a fine storyline, but, like, it should have ended, like, maybe a month ago. So why is it with him that they just drag out, you know?
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's just that they have these long-term ideas for Roman, and they're very careful and meticulous about
just
who they place him with.
Scheduling wise, we're trying to get to a point.
Yeah, I don't know. But like you said with John Cena, one of the greatest of all time, I'm really hoping that he gets in. And if it's Baron Corbin, I think that's fine. I think that's fine with Baron Corbin. I think Baron Corbin, to me, it's about building Corbin, not so much building Cena, obviously. So having Corbin in a match with Cena, and if he beats him at Mania, great.
And think about that. He would beat Kurt Angle and John Cena back-to-back at WrestleMania.
Yep.
Just imagine that.
And I would love Corbin to mention more often that he retired Kurt Angle or beat him in his retirement match. He doesn't touch on it a whole lot. But he could brag about that, and that's what it's all about with Corbin. I don't need – especially after Corbin – gets beat at Super Showdown. Let's face it, he's going to get beat at Super Showdown. He's going to need a rebound, and that could be the big rebound, is beating down John Cena upon his return. So, all right. So one last thing I got to ask you about, and that is continuing on our theme of rumored WrestleMania matches. And again, spoiler alert, if anybody doesn't want to hear this, just pause and move ahead a little while. And this is just something that has been circulating for a while about who the Undertaker's opponent could be at WrestleMania. And rumor has it, it could be AJ Styles, as those two have never come across one another. It certainly would bode well, I think, for Undertaker, because he doesn't have to do a whole lot with AJ there to carry the heavy load of the match. And again, it's all speculation. Nothing is confirmed. Do you think this would be a good matchup? Would you want to see AJ versus the Undertaker?
I mean, I don't think I wouldn't not want to see it. Like, I feel like it would be a good match. I think AJ would make the match super, you know, I think he would be a very good opponent for Undertaker at this point. I wouldn't be against it for sure. I just, my thing is, what's the story? Like, how do you get to that match? Is it just a simple AJ calls the Undertaker out type thing, or... is AJ running his mouth and Undertaker interrupts him one night? Or I would just be really interested to see how they get to that match. If Undertaker is up for it and we don't get Undertaker and Sting or anything like Undertaker Fiend or anything crazy like that, then yeah, I mean, why not, you know? And if Undertaker is set on having a match and it's not going to be any of those other type of situations, then yeah, AJ Styles would be the best option, you know? For sure, AJ. And I think AJ himself, that would be such a cool moment for him, thinking of, you know, just thinking of AJ's career and his road to get to the WWE and now having a match at WrestleMania against The Undertaker. Like, how cool would that be? So I would totally be happy for AJ. Why not?
And AJ's in-ring style is the opposite of Goldberg's in-ring style. So I think that bodes well for The Undertaker to not have to do a whole lot, just get in. It's kind of like the greatest hits.
He's smaller, more agile. It's just easier, you know?
He could take the bumps.
At this stage.
Yep. And Undertaker would just be there to, you know, facilitate his greatest hits of choke slams and last roll. He could do a last ride on AJ's, you know, 200 pounds or so. AJ presents a lot of positives in that match, doing most of the work, taking most of the bumps, making Undertaker look good by selling the hell out of his punches. And there's just really a litany of things that to me would be a much better opponent. People have been talking forever about now Sting and Undertaker. It's going to happen. And I even alluded to that on my show last week, that I don't want to see it. I don't need to see it. It's something that should stay and remain in video game land. I just don't need to see it 20 years late. So.
Yeah, I sadly agree as well. Even if this was 5 years ago, maybe the story would be different. I just think it's past.
Now, if they have a moment in the ring where maybe they stand and face off, but I mean, there's no actual match.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, where they acknowledge what could have been.
But even then, it's like, don't tease me with it, you know? Like, I don't even want to see them in the same building if I'm not going to get a match. Because then it's like, why are they, you know, what's the face-off for, you know? I mean, it would definitely be a cool moment, though, for sure. Yeah, and, like, well, that's cool visual.
That's what WWE's all about, are the moments. And
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel you.
I don't know. It's something that they could have jumped on, and it's a shame that it never happened, but...
Yeah, man, it's sad.
No, it is. And you know what? I think it could have been something special, just as Goldberg and Austin could have been something special back in 2000 when they could have made it happen if the two companies came to a deal for a mega match. Could you have imagined
insane. It would have, oh my Lord, that would have been so epic.
Like, I honestly don't know what would have been bigger. Austin, Goldberg, or Undertaker, Sting in their prime when the Monday Night Wars were going on. I really don't know what would have been hotter or bigger. I mean, it's something that just gives me chills to think about what could have been if the two companies just, you know, put their differences aside, split the profit, and made this thing massive. I mean, oh my God. So, all right. Well, Ashley, it's been, as always, a pleasure, and you have now got me on the bandwagon of going to – I know what I'm going to sleep to tonight, and it's going to be the damn Last Man Standing match from Royal Rumble.
I don't know what year that was. I want to say it's 2002.
He came back in SummerSlam 2002, so maybe it was Rumble 03.
Yeah, so maybe, okay. It probably would have been Rumble 03, you're right.
Okay. Jeez, yeah, you're graduating high school. Oh, I'm getting old. I just turned 35 like last week, so it's starting to settle in now. I said it to myself the other day. I go, I'm 35, and to some people it's like, oh, that's not old, but I'm like, I'm halfway to 70. Like, what is happening?
Right, dude. I'm right there with you. I'm 28. I'll be 29 next month, and I'm still at that point. I was like, oh my God. Then I'm like 1 year away from 30. And then it's just like,
yeah, 30 is like, something else.
Life sets in.
30 is something else because you can't say, oh, I'm young in my 20s.
Right. No, you're not anymore.
It changes. Oh my God. It changes everything. So, all right. Well, enjoy your last, like, how long do you have left? Did you just have your birthday?
My birthday is March 13th. So I'll be 29 on March 13th. So around the corner. It's on a Friday nonetheless. So yeah, there's that.
Oh no, it is
Friday the 13th. Go figure.
Okay. All right. Well, no. Well, it won't. It shouldn't be too bad. Like, I mean, you're still in your 20s. You should go do something fun. Enjoy your last year of being in your 20s. Because yeah, I don't know what it was when I turned 30. I mean, I got married that year and everything else, but. Yeah, it's a reality check when you look at your life. You're like, what have I done, right? Because by 30, when you're 18, you picture being, oh, I'm going to be married or have kids by, you know, 25. And when I was 25, I'm looking around at my life. I'm like, I'm still drinking every weekend. Mm-hmm. I have a girlfriend that's not too serious. And I'm like, I don't, what am I doing? And then I hit 30 and I'm, you know, it finally happened. But anyway, I'm rambling. So. All right. Well, Ashley, before you go, though, of course, one last time, let everyone know where they can find you and the information about the other show that you do.
Yeah. Feel free to follow me on Twitter. It's at ASHMANNS. Yeah, and check out Wrestle Rewind. And just feel free to check us out there on Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. Yeah, and feel free to give me a follow on Twitter and talk wrestling or whatever.
Awesome. Well, definitely check the show out. It is a lot of fun to watch. I watch it every week. And you guys do a great job. So, Ashley, thanks for stopping on and filling in this week. And we will talk to you on, I hope it's not your birthday because I'll feel really bad. No, because it's a Friday, so we won't.
Yeah,
But let's
no, we're
see.
good.
So it'll be one, two, so it'll be March 8th. So we
All
will
right.
be past, because the chamber
But yeah, I
is.
think that's the night of the chamber. I'm
Oh,
pretty
wow.
sure.
So maybe we'll do a Saturday because I don't want to do the night of the chamber.
And we can do a
So.
preview.
Damn, we can't get away. That's true. Yeah, we'll do a damn preview. Even when we try to F it up, we can't.
Right.
All right, so I will talk to you on the Elimination Chamber preview show on March 7th. Ashley, thanks so much for stopping by.
All right, sounds good. Take care.
Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.
So if you guys love video games, then you got to check out the Hammer and Trickster YouTube channel. The channel was created by two veterans. One was from the Army, the other from the Navy. And what they do is play Rainbow Six Siege. They upload a new video every single week, and they play other video games as well. But you gotta check this out. If you love watching raw, unedited video gameplay with the shoot 'em up style games, you gotta check this channel out. Again, the channel is called Hammer and Trickster. They also add some badass rock music, and you can just watch them kick ass for hours. So head on over to YouTube and just subscribe to Hammer and Trickster. Trust me, you won't regret it.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.